Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and they call it FLAME, the latest cyber espionage tool unleashed on Iran to weaken its nuclear program. For better or worse, it seems to represent a major leap in cyber warfare weaponry. Joining us now is Kim Zetter, senior reporter at Wired, who explored the most complex malware known yet in her most recent piece, Meet FLAME, the massive spyware malware infiltrating Iranian computers. Kim, thanks for coming on WNYC today. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Malware, virus, worm, what is this and how does it work?
Well, it's a combination of a virus, worm, and a Trojan horse. It's complex only in the sense that it has multiple functions. It's basically a toolkit that has a lot of modules that can be plugged in and out of the malware based on what the attackers want to do on a specific machine. So there are modules, for instance, that will turn on the internal microphone in a computer in order to record conversations that someone might be having via Skype or even conversations that someone is having in a room in the vicinity of the computer. It will also take screenshots of the computer while someone is writing instant messages or email communications, and it will turn on the Bluetooth on a computer that has Bluetooth and do a discovery to find other Bluetooth devices in the vicinity, such as a cell phone, and then it will siphon the contact information from the cell phone.
In other words, it's a very advanced remote control device.
Yeah, I mean, advanced is kind of a cagey term here because we've seen malware that does these things in other sort of instances. But the fact that it's all combined and it all sort of interacts with one another, all of the different modules, this is what makes it very complex. But we've seen, you know, malware before that will turn on the internal microphone. We've seen malware that takes screenshots, keystroke loggers, things like that. But to have it all wrapped up in a single package here and to work sort of seamlessly is what's new here.
Reports first came, as I understand it, from the Iranian Oil Ministry and then the Iranian National Oil Company that large swaths of information were being stolen and deleted from their systems, which prompted the United Nations to look into the matter. Why did the UN get involved? Is this somehow seen as illegal warfare or espionage?
No. The United Nations got involved because it was a specific unit of the United Nations which deals with its international telecommunications unit. So, therefore, they get involved in technology issues. And because, member states were being infected, they reached out to researchers at Kaspersky based in Russia and asked them to see if they could find anything to indicate the malware. Here's the thing, though. It's unclear whether FLAME is actually the malware that was responsible for the data that was being deleted from systems in Iran.
Mm-hmm.
The Iranian systems, they were calling the malware that hit them Wiper. And when Kaspersky examined a system out of Iran that was hit with Wiper, they were not unable to recover anything. It essentially deleted itself and deleted everything on the computer. So it's unclear whether or not that malware is specifically related to FLAME. FLAME itself doesn't have a module, or at least there's no module that's been found that will actually delete files in the way that Wiper was. It's possible that Wiper was a separate module connected to FLAME that hasn't been used on other machines yet.
Is FLAME American, Israeli, both, someone else's? Do we know?
It's unclear. If you look at where the infections are occurring, that tells you a bit about who the attackers might be. So it's primarily hit machines in the Middle East, in Iran, in Lebanon, in Syria, machines in Sudan, some machines in East Europe, but again, primarily it's the Middle East and also occupied West Bank. So if you're looking at who might be interested in machines in those countries, that narrows it down, you know, pretty much to Israel and the U.S. who have, the biggest interest in those areas right now.
And can we say that FLAME has accomplished anything in terms of U.S. or Israeli security interests? That is, I presume their main target is to somehow weaken Iran's ability to develop nuclear weapons.
Well, FLAME, there's no sign yet that FLAME was involved in anything related to covert operations against Iran's nuclear program. So that was Stuxnet, and that definitely attacked Iran's uranium enrichment program. Flame, right now, it doesn't have any sabotage element that we've found. Again, it's just espionage, and it also hasn't hit machines that are used in the uranium enrichment program. The primary infections for Flame right now are against individuals, academic institutions, some government-run organizations.
So general espionage, perhaps. I've read that Lebanon, Syria, and Sudan, some computers in those countries have also been hit by Flame. Do you know that to be true?
Yes, that's some of the additional infections. Again, this is an indication that it's not just Iran, and that this may be a multi-use tool that's employed, for multiple operations whenever they need, general intelligence for any plan.
In a New York Times front page story today, I don't know if you've seen it yet, because I know you're on the West Coast and it's early, David Sanger reports that President Obama has secretly ordered sophisticated cyber attacks on Iran going back to 2010, when there was the Stuxnet attack, which did target Iran's main nuclear enrichment facilities. What's the relationship between Stuxnet and Flame, as far as we know?
Well, according to Sanger's piece, he actually asked officials if Flame was part of the Stuxnet plan. The Stuxnet operation was part of something that was codenamed Operation Olympic Games, I believe. And they said that Flame was not part of that. However, they declined to acknowledge to Sanger whether or not Flame was also created by the U.S. So they seem to be indicating that they're unrelated. And that's what analysts concluded when I wrote my initial story on Monday about Flame, that it wasn't written by the same people. It probably wasn't part of the same operation, but it does use some of the same tools that Stuxnet used, which would indicate that the people, separate teams, developed Stuxnet and Flame, but that they had access to some of the same resources.
Do you think that the nature of war might change as a result of these cyber developments? This is kind of a big think question, but that war could wind up relying on who has the more sophisticated malware rather than who has the better spies on the ground or who kills more enemy fighters?
Well, we've always had an element of cyber warfare. We just called it electronic warfare in the past, and it hasn't necessarily been sabotaged to the extent of what happened in Natanz. We would have incidences where you would use electronic warfare in conjunction with a kinetic attack. So if you were sending in bombers to do an airstrike, you would take out the radar systems. You might take out other computer systems, communication systems, things like that. So electronic warfare has always been part, or not always, but as long as technology has been an aspect of military communications, has been a part of military operations. This does sort of raise this to a new level of possibilities of having, more sabotage in electronic warfare. And, yeah, we definitely will see more of that.
Could it contribute to a world where war is conducted with less killing? Have you considered that as a possible outcome of cyber warfare in general? To take a really extreme example, if you could cripple the ability of, a city like Hiroshima to function because you can turn off all its power and destroy all its computer's ability to function, then maybe you wouldn't have to drop a nuclear bomb.
Well, except that not everything is connected electronically. So in Stuxnet, one of the reasons they had to do the operation the way they did it was because the computers that actually controlled the enrichment in Natanz were not connected to the Internet. So they had to devise very specific ways to get the code walked to the systems that they want. There are critical systems that are not going to be connected in a way that they can be attacked remotely like this. And in many cases, nuclear plants, things like that, ordinarily wouldn't be connected. So I think that some of the damage that you're going to be able to do is going to be limited. You're going to have to do some combination with other bombing.
Tell us how the Flame operators can completely erase the malware from an infected computer without leaving any traces on the computer. That's one of the most interesting aspects of this to me. I guess it's called the suicide module. In other words, they can do this and leave no electronic fingerprints that they did?
Yeah, and there's precedent for this. There's malware that already has done this. So essentially, if they want to withdraw, let's say, the malware from an infected system, they can send this module out. The module will essentially look for any files that are part of Flame, any files that Flame created, any changes that Flame made on the system, and sort of delete the files and restore the system to normal operation. It's basically just a matter of writing code that, you know, searches for the fingerprints it wants in the system and then erases them and then withdraws itself from the system.
If the U.S. and its allies are doing this kind of thing to other countries, then presumably other countries will develop the technology to do this to us. Are there anti-Flame or generally anti-cyber espionage defense systems?
Well, we supposedly have antivirus. We have, the NSA has more sophisticated detection mechanisms. So there's a combination of tools and defenses that you can use. But when you have a targeted attack that is designed to go after a specific system and, a very motivated attacker, it's very difficult to prevent someone from getting into your computer.
So Flame could be set to target specific industries or specific companies.
Yes, and if they use something that's called like a zero-day exploit, which is an exploit that attacks a vulnerability that no one knows about yet, they have a higher likelihood of actually getting into systems, getting by antivirus, things like that. That's how Stuxnet succeeded. It used 4 zero-day exploits, and antivirus programs don't recognize those exploits. So initial attacks that use a zero-day exploit can be very successful.
And it was discovered by a Russia-based antivirus firm, Kaspersky Lab, which reports that it's actually been pulling information from affected computers for at least 2 years. Why are we only finding out about it now?
We Kaspersky only discovered it now. This is still sort of kind of a question that's unknown. The creators of Flame actually designed it to look for antivirus on a system, determine what antivirus programs were used on the system, and based on what it found, it altered its behavior. And we saw this in other pieces of malware as well. So the attackers were very sophisticated in that they tested their program against antivirus systems just to make sure that it wouldn't be detected. So this is, one of the methods that they used to hide themselves for so long.
And do I understand correctly that someone could send a module into a computer that would turn on the internal microphone or webcam without the computer owner knowing?
Yes. So one of the modules will turn on the internal it doesn't actually specify the camera. That can easily be tweaked, though, to include the camera as well. Right now, the one that was found was the microphone. Well, I want to point out what's interesting about,
And I'm sorry to say we have 10 seconds left. Go ahead. Do your best.
Well, I was just going to say that when you get it on a computer, instead of siphoning intelligence over the phone or the Internet, you're getting it before it's encrypted, and that's the advantage here.
Kim Zetter, senior reporter at Wired, wrote the piece, Meet Flame. Thanks a lot, Kim. Great job explaining this.
You're welcome.
And Elaine from Baltimore writes on our page, Cold War to Code War.